And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
And hello everybody and welcome to Radio Free Asgard. This is episode number 157. Coming at you from beautiful Chicago, Illinois, as always. My name is Tom Harris, I'm your host, and we are in the middle of summer here in Chicago, which means this is allergy season. Yes, indeed. And yeah, having the hot and humid summer weather, tried to get out a little bit this weekend, and it was just dire, folks, just dire. Now, it is calming down a little bit. We're getting some cooler weather towards the end of this week, and hopefully that will stick around for a while. I'm really not made for this 80s and 90s weather, folks. I'm really not. I should be living in the Nordic countries where it's a little bit more temperate all year round. Anyway, so before we get started this week, I just have a couple of shout-outs here. First of all, a huge thank you to our listener, Gene Hendricks, who does his own podcast. It's called The Hammer Podcasts, and it's over on the Two True Freaks Podcast Network, which is a home to a host of really good shows that I listen to. Anyway, Gene mentioned us on his show last week as we are getting close to the Eric Masterson introduction here in the DeFalco Friends run. I'm not sure if we're actually going to make it there, but it is coming up pretty soon. So I think we're going to get an introduction to Eric Masterson in the next couple of weeks. But we are getting to the end of the first story arc, and then we have a couple kind of one-off stories. And then, of course, we're going to be shifting gears again. Not really sure if we're going to go back and finish off the Lee Kirby era or whether we're going to move on to something else. Not really sure. I don't want to stay with one era for too terribly long. You know how that is. Don't want to get tired of doing that same old thing. And, you know, of course, we kind of leave things off and then we come back and, you know, how long has it been since we've been covering Thor Volume 2, you know? So you never know where we're going to go next. It's just kind of the nature of the beast. And I do have a couple more people to shout out to. First of all, Charlotte Natalie, who is a new listener of ours down from down under, down in Australia. Yeah, I do a horrible Australian accent. And welcome along to Charlotte. And Neil Stanifer has joined our Facebook group. Hello, Neil. And a big shout out to you as well. It's always nice having new listeners. And, you know, feel free to join the conversation. That is, of course, why we're here. Noticed we've got a lot of foreign listeners now listening to the show. And you guys are being quiet. You know, feel free to, you know, pipe up and join the Facebook group. Send us emails, whatever. Now, of course, if you want to email the show, the email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. You can also join our Facebook group, the Radio Free Asgard group. Just look for us and you will find us. All right, so we do have an issue of Thor to cover, so let's just get right to it. So here's our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold
indeed, and this week we are covering Thor number 389, has a cover date of March of 1988, retailed for 75 cents, and this is part 3 of the Celestial Saga. We get a truly retro cover here by, you know, Ron Frenz and Brett Breeding, and it definitely calls to mind some of the Lee Kirby covers. You got to kind of get a montage, and you kind of see maybe have the floaty heads of Lord Pegasus and Myla and a couple random people. That almost looks like Jane Foster there in the background, though. I don't think she's in this issue. I know she's in an upcoming issue, though. We have Arishem the Judge and Thor holding his broken hammer, though. You know, the hammer he's holding on the cover is not as broken as the hammer inside the book, which is basically just a handle. We have a cover blurb, of course. When the thunder fails, the fate of a world, Thor battles on. The Stunning Secret of Celestial Judgment, Asgard Imperiled, and much, much more. And Thor is standing center, kind of with his broken hammer in hand, going, "Arr," like he's in the middle of a big knockdown, drag-out fight, which indeed he is, if you remember from last issue. We open up to the splash page where we have the credits. Tom DeFalco, writer. Ron Frenz, penciler. Brett Breeding, inker. John Workman, letterer. Max Scheele, the colorist. And Ralph Macchio is the editor. The title of the story, When the Thunder Fails. And we open up in the bridge of the ship of Pegas, the pirate king or pirate captain or whatever the heck he is. And they are looking at the celestial Exitar out of the cosmic voyeuroscope or window or whatever it is. And we see Exitar, he's got his hands raised and energy pouring out of his hands. And we kind of saw that last issue. And we have this kind of, I don't know, gnat storm of spaceships kind of flying around his head. And of course, we know Thor is up there in his head as well. And he's surrounded by clouds. And of course, we get exposition from Myla here in Pegas just to kind of get us situated in our story here. The Celestials are getting ready to destroy us all, and our entire fleet can't save us. Just look at those creatures, Pegas. The smaller one must stand a full 2,000 feet tall. She's talking about Arishem, the judge here. The other is easily 10 times that height.
Be silent, woman. I'm trying to think. I don't care if those metal-plated space monsters vaporize this entire solar system, as long as I survive.
And so Myla's following Pegas, and Pegas has got some kind of giant pink piece of machinery that he's carrying around. You kind of wonder about this civilization. You can tell they're like decadent and stuff because they color their machinery like this really bright, hot pink. And Myla's thinking to herself, I almost can't believe that the Celestials are really here on Pangoria. According to legend, they are cosmic deities who conduct genetic experiments throughout the known galaxies and judge those races are worthy of life and which are not. What are you doing, Pegas?
I'm trying to tap into the vast supply of energy, which lies deep within the molten core of the planet itself.
Do you think you can use it to generate a blast strong enough to kill the Celestials?
Don't be naive, Myla. I intend to use this energy to punch a hole, an escape route through the force barrier which the Celestials have erected around our planet.
You said erection.
Then the people of Pangoria are truly doomed, Myla's thinking to herself. Only one who even tried to help us was a stranger to this world, a warrior named Thor. But where is he now? What's become of him? And we see various scenes in the background of rocks flying around and looks like kind of mass hysteria going on. We then cut to a full-page spread here, and this is a really familiar-looking full-page spread. It actually is very reminiscent of a scene back in the Lee Kirby Thor where we had the antibodies of Ego, the living planet. I don't know if you guys remember that far back, but remember that he had like a pillar created of these living humanoid antibodies, and Thor was kind of swept up in the middle of it. And this is very reminiscent of that, if not a downright swipe of this. And these warriors that are generated by the Celestial's brain are these sort of orange kind of terminus looking dudes, and they're all carrying a little hammer just like Thor used to have. And we get a little bit of an exposition here. At that precise moment, deep within the battle armor of the Celestial known as Exitar the Exterminator, Thor is fighting against this pillar dudes.
Get back, ye foul and living brutes! Get back, I say! Though ye be as numberless as the drops of water in an ocean, ye have neither the strength nor the courage to stand before the avenging fury of Son of Odin. Though ye have stripped me of my own battle armor and have shattered the head of my sacred Uru hammer, the mighty Thor shall never accept defeat.
And he's smashing them, and just they're going flying, and he's defeating them one by one pretty easily, so obviously they're not that formidable as one-on-one. But I guess taken as a group, they could kind of overwhelm you eventually.
Great Odin, says Thor. As fast as I crush these savage creatures, hundreds more rise from the very floor to attack me. But Thor will not fall victim of despair. I will keep on fighting, even as I must discard all that remains of my faithful hammer and take up this creature's hammer instead. And he grabs one of the creature's hammers and he's pounding them with it with a crack.
And he finally breaks free of this giant group of I don't know what they are, antibodies or whatever. And he's making his way to the giant brain dome, which, remember, he shattered last issue. At last, my path to yon gleaming sphere is clear. I am convinced that it houses the Celestial's brain, or whatever passes for his center of intelligence. Once I reach it, I can render him unconscious. Though I shattered its covering earlier, I was attacked before I could complete my desperate task. And Thor's kind of going into this dome, and he's breaking little pieces of the glass or whatever it is to get in. Though they be pirates, killers, and worse, justice still demands that the people of Pangoria be spared. The Celestials should not have the right to decide which races shall live and which shall die. Such ultimate authority belongs not in the hands of any single entity or group of beings, not even a race of space deities like the Celestials. And he's destroying the glass around the entrance, I guess you could say, with a crack and a fizzack. And he's still being swarmed by these antibody things coming out of the floor. And Thor realizes that the hammer is not affecting the Celestial's body. And he realizes why. Curse me for a careless fool. I should have realized that the Celestial would be invulnerable to its own weaponry. But that will not halt my vengeance. Nothing will. He's being overwhelmed by these antibody things. But he tosses them all aside. And he goes leaping into the Celestial's brain dome thing. And before he does, he's like, no matter what the odds, no matter how many foes I must face, the son of Odin will not fail the people of Pangoria. They will be spared, and justice will triumph. So swears Thor, God of Thunder. And he goes leaping off into a giant magenta Kirby crackle. Thor shall now do what must be done. I shall destroy yon brain, even if I must rip it apart with my bare hands and teeth. For Asgard, an honor eternal! And he does a belly flop into this giant purple glow. And Exitar outside says in the caption, he suddenly reacts, quivering as though from an unexpected blow. So Thor basically is just leaping right into his brain. And we see Thor has leapt in, and he's kind of being bathed in this green glow or radiation or whatever it is. And we get a little bit of exposition here. Never before has the mighty Thor experienced such utter agony, such intense pain. And we shift back to Pegasus's ship. And I just realized that Pegasus only has three fingers. That's interesting. I hadn't noticed that earlier. I wonder if I went back if it would actually be that way. Okay, probably. So Pegasus apparently has succeeded in releasing a destructive blast. He says, I've done it. I finally finished all the necessary adjustments. At last, I can channel all the molten fury of our planetary core into a single destructive blast. And he sets off this ray gun thing, and they're watching it hit the force field in the sky. It's working! I'm certain the beam has successfully penetrated the accursed force barrier. We must hurry, Myla. There's no time to lose. The Celestials may discover the breach and attempt to seal it.
I'm not going, Pegasus.
What?
Our homeworld is being destroyed, Pegasus. Our people are dying in the streets. You can't just run out on them.
Are you insane, woman? Did you want to die?
No, but I won't take the coward's way out. I'm not going to abandon my world. Not now.
And she goes running off, and Pegasus heads to his ship. He's like, foolish. Very foolish. And Myla goes outside, which is even more foolish. And there's lots of storming, and you know, the buildings are crumbling, and people are all running and screaming and all that. And Myla's thinking to herself, the storm is growing worse by the minute. The ground itself is beginning to vibrate. And there's people running around.
The hour of judgment is surely at hand. We're all doomed. Doomed. People are panicking, she thinks. They don't know where to run or hide. So this is how Pangoria dies. Maybe Pegasus had it right after all.
And then she notices this group of glowing green children. I guess they're not really glowing green.
Those children, they've been left behind, abandoned.
And they're going, help us, please.
There isn't much I can do, except offer them a little comfort. Maybe that will be enough. I'm coming, little ones. Can you save us? I'm afraid not, but maybe the end will be easier for us all if we just huddle together.
Oh, my.
I'm afraid.
So am I, little one.
And we then shift back to Thor, who's kind of like body surfing on this blue glowing part of the Celestial's brain. And the very Sal Buscema looking page here of Thor going, "Arrgh! My body feels so strange. Something is happening to me." And we see like his skin looks like it's been stripped away, and we see just his musculature, and then we see just his skeleton, and we got sound effects. Wham, bam, zam, thank you, ma'am. And another extremely Sal Buscema-ish page here of Thor having these flashbacks, and you can see that he's his life is rushing before his eyes. We see him in Asgard with Odin, and looks like he's lifting the hammer for the first time. We see the Warriors Three kind of posing, and we see Thor standing with Baldur and Sif, and the very, very classic 70s appearance of Baldur and Sif. And then we see the Avengers, you know, Thor's comrades on Earth, Captain Marvel, the glowing female one, Captain America, the Black Knight, and Hercules. And Thor saying, "The Celestial is rapidly sifting through my memories. But why? Why? Why?" And we see him sinking down into this big giant glow of pink Kirby crackle. And then we cut to the outside of Exitar. And Exitar spits Thor out, almost literally, with a patoom, which is, yeah, just basically spits Thor out through his mouth. And we see Thor streaking out like this giant purple missile going whoosh, and then landing in the city with a whoom and a whack. And he lands not far from where Myla and the children are. And I noticed that some of these children are like these mutant alien sort of things. And Myla's thinking to herself, "Now what? Are we being bombed? No, I'm certain I saw a human figure in the center of that blinding light. Who is that? Great Pegas, it's Thor, but I don't think he's breathing." So she and the children are kind of rushing towards him. And then we shift our attention once again to Arishem the judge. And he's standing there showing us his thumb like he often does. But he's moving around. He doesn't have like his thumb down anymore like he did before. And we see the sort of hieroglyphics on his thumb, the very Kirby-ish sort of hieroglyphics there. And we get a little bit of narration here. "Elsewhere, at that very second, Arishem, the Celestial Judge, raises his right hand. On his palm is the formula that enables him to decimate worlds. The dominant race of Pangoria has failed to prove itself deserving enough to survive, and the time has finally come for his decree of death to be carried out. Instantly, far faster than thought itself, the genetic code is transferred to the waiting Exitar, who is called the Exterminator." And it looks like there's lightning coming out of Arishem's hands and going into Exitar's throat. That's kind of what it looks like. And Exitar begins to glow and to throb and pulse with unknown and unnameable forces, says the captions. And then Exitar releases them. Upward they soar, higher and higher, until they reach the force barrier which the Celestials have erected around Pangoria. And then the forces coalesce, spreading themselves across the barrier like some great monstrous blanket, a blanket of death. And you see the energy coming up out of Exitar's head and spreading out much like, well, you know, like they said, a blanket of death and covering the entire planet. And we see Pegasus' ships and people who are trying to get away, and they're trying to attack Exitar or whatever. And we get some exposition here, but basically we see that the bad guys, all the pirates and Pegas and all these people, they're actually melting and dissolving. And it says here, "The Pangorian ships, which were sent to attack the Celestials, are the first to feel their fatal touch. Instantly, at the moment of contact, the pirates within and the ships themselves begin to melt away, as their physical matter is immediately reduced to primal elements, and then absolute nothingness. Slowly, powerfully, inexorably, the deadly veil sweeps across the entire planet." And we see Pegasus' ship trying to get away. "Faster, you fools! Faster! That blasted cloud is gaining on us!"
"It's no use, mighty Pegas. We can't escape it."
"No! No! It can't end like this! It can't! I don't want to die! Save me, please!
Save me! And we see Pegas dissolve into a puddle of yellow goo energy sort of thing. And we then shift back to Thor, Myla, and the children, and they're on the planet. And we see this very Matrix-y sort of writing. You know, the celestial hieroglyphs, like on Arshem's hand, are covering the entire sky. And they're kind of just taking over the whole planet. And Thor's saying, "The end is near, Myla. Yon shroud of death hath already begun to descend upon us. Within mere moments, Pangoria will be no more. Never before hath the son of Odin known such bitter failure. Never before hath Thor been so utterly defeated."
"Don't blame yourself, Thunder God. No one could have beaten the Celestials. I just feel sorry for the children. They never had a fair shot at life. They never had a chance to prove themselves. They're being judged and punished because others were unworthy. It just isn't fair. Isn't there anything we can do for them?"
"Aye," says Thor. "We can shield them with our own bodies and continue to comfort them while life remains."
And the kind of cloud of death hieroglyphics are moving closer, closer, and ever closer. And then we have grim and total silence. And we cut to outer space, looking in at Pangoria, and we see that these celestial hieroglyphs have completely covered the entire planet. And it's like there's this orange sphere all around it with writing on it. And then all of a sudden it begins to recede, according to the caption, to pull back, to reveal a world full of new and exciting wonders. And it's pulling back, and there's people on the planet, and they're like, I'm alive?
So am I. But what happened to our city? And where did all this vegetation come from?
And we see Thor and Myla, and Myla's like,
Thor, the Celestials have spared us and the children. But how? Why?
I do not know, Myla, but methinks an answer will soon be forthcoming.
And the energy, this orange energy that surrounded the planet with all the hieroglyphics on it, is being drawn back into the body of Exitar the Exterminator, and he's kind of absorbing this energy back into himself.
I don't understand any of this. The Pangoria of old seems to have been replaced by a lush paradise.
Aye, woman. Your people are being given a second chance, a voice says from beyond.
And we see what they're looking at, and there's another Thor. At least looks a lot like Thor. It's like a copy of Thor. And it's being friendly. Comes to Thor and Myla and says,
Greetings, Thor. I am a replicoid, a genetic duplicate of you which has been created by my celestial masters. I bring you a most urgent message. You must never again interfere with the affairs of the Celestials. There are levels of power and scales of justice in this universe which are even beyond an immortal's ability to grasp. And Thor's like, how dare you?
Be silent and hear me out, says the copy of Thor. Arshem, the Celestial Judge, deemed the dominant race of this planet unworthy of life and sentenced it to death. And so Exitar came to exterminate that segment of the race that made it impure and allowed only those worthy of life to survive. And we see scenes of these Pangorian people and all these really fancy plants, and everyone's all happy and running around and hugging each other and cheering. And yeah, basically they're frolicking around in this Garden of Eden type of thing.
In your ignorance, you might have disrupted a process of purification and condemned the entire race to extinction. Luckily, you did not, and the race has been given another opportunity to prove itself. The Celestials have erected a force barrier, which will remain around this planet, protecting it, sealing it off from outside interference, until this race has had time to grow and prosper. Only one problem remains. You. You must be removed from this world before you accidentally pollute the genetic makeup of this race.
So he's thinking Thor's going to go around screwing everyone, I guess. And so the celestial Thor replicoid shoots Thor with an energy beam with a kazam. And Myla's all shocked. He's like, Thor! And then we see that, in fact, not hurting Thor, it has repaired his clothing. Not the armor that he was wearing, but it's like his regular old Thor costume.
Odd's blood, says Thor. My wounds are healed, and my clothes restored. Aye. My masters wish you to leave this world in the same condition you entered it.
And he, he's carrying his armor now in the bag again, because that's what he was doing when he showed up on the planet.
Thus, I have one last task to perform.
Your most prized possession must be made whole again. And the Celestial levitates the bag holding fragments of Mjolnir and the handle of Mjolnir, which is kind of stuck in Thor's belt. And kind of with a wave of his hand, basically heals Mjolnir, and Mjolnir is all one piece again. A sacred bond exists between you and your enchanted weapon, Thunder God. A bond so powerful that it may even be respected by the Celestials themselves. And Thor's holding up Mjolnir in his hand, looking really happy, as well he should. So that seems to be basically it. And Myla is, you know, talking to Thor. They're surrounded by these ugly children.
Thor, I know you must go, but...
Weep not, Myla. While I am indebted to the Celestials for restoring Mjolnir, the son of Odin is not bound by their orders. And the Celestial copy of Thor is not pleased by this. He's like, I'm afraid you have no choice in the matter of your banishment, Thunder God. The Celestials want you gone. And so, you shall instantly be returned to the planet where you belong. And we see Thor engulfed in yellow Kirby crackle, and he's shooting off this planet through this sort of massive Kirby space, and he lands on Earth. And Thor's like, by the gods, this is Midgard. Why did the Celestial send me here and not to Eternal Asgard? And he is kind of in the middle of Central Park, it looks like, and we see there's an anthill on the ground, and I guess that's supposed to be symbolic, you know. In truth, the actions of the Celestials are unfathomable to me, as mine must be to the inhabitants of yon anthill. Perhaps I will heed the warning of the Celestials. Mayhap if fate lead me to another confrontation with them. Perhaps I shall not. But that need not concern me now. Let the worshippers of evil despair. Let the dwellers of darkness tremble in fear. And let the righteous and just raise their voices in joyous celebration. The God of Thunder has returned to Earth. So be it! And we see Thor flying over New York, and he's all happy, and he's got Mjolnir, etc., etc. And we then shift scenes one final time. Now to far off Asgard, and we see Asgardians in their super futuristic sci-fi city, and they're just kind of milling around. And we see a pink glow appearing in the air, a crackling of energy. And all of a sudden, there are soldiers and tanks and stuff ripping through Asgard. And it says here, at that precise moment, an unimaginable distance away in mighty Asgard, the legendary home of the Norse gods, a shimmering rift suddenly appears above a crowded city street. And then, and the, you know, the tanks and stuff are blasting their way through. They're shooting these hot pink rays at the populace, and everyone is running and screaming. And the soldiers are, they're dressed kind of like the Cobra soldiers from G.I. Joe. They got like this green battle armor, and they're carrying these big red knife things, and they have a kind of Egyptian look to them, which would tell us who sent them.
At last, we have successfully crossed the dimensional barriers. Asgard is ours! Death! Death to these false gods! Let them fall before the faithful servants of Seth, the serpent god of death.
And that is Thor number 389. Yeah, so Seth has invaded Asgard. Thor is on Earth. And we'll be back right after this.
The dawn of an age. The founding of a family.
You know we haven't done enough research into the effects of cosmic rays.
We've got to take that chance.
Conditions are right tonight. Let's go.
They're penetrating the ship. Our shielding isn't strong enough.
I feel like I'm burning up.
Too heavy. Can't move.
Too heavy.
We're all alive.
I feel so strange.
You're fading away. I can't see you at all anymore.
Look what's happened to you. You're changing.
Oh, Reed, not you too.
What happened to me? To all of us.
I can fly.
We gotta use that power to help mankind, right?
And so was born the Fantastic Four.
For soon the Mole Man will have the entire world in his power.
I am the mightiest living mortal on Earth. And half mankind shall feel that might.
The Fantastic Four. Little do they dream they're the palms in the hands of Dr. Doom.
Human Torch will be the Puppet Master's next victim.
You Earthlings can't change the way I can. That means I'm the most powerful person on Earth.
I've been expecting you.
for I am the Thinker.
I vow never to return, my lord, until the Fantastic Four are no more and the planet Earth is no more. You're in the presence of the awesome Ralatots, King of Kings, Master of Men, and Lord of the Seven Suns.
Fool, you're just a muscular freak, blind or whole.
Stop! You must not enter the castle of Diablo.
My journey has ended. This planet shall sustain me until it has been drained of all elemental life. So speak, Galactus.
Flame on!
It's clobbering time!
The Fantastic Four, from the very beginning, witnessed the origins of a legend. The Fantastic Forecast, ffcast.libsyn.com.
And we are back. So, of course, I do have a few comments, as I always do, and I'm going to start with the stuff I like about the issue, and then I'm going to move into the stuff that I didn't much care for. Now, I definitely like the art. I think that Ron Friend's Brett Breeding doing a very serviceable job. They do a better Sal Buscema than Sal Buscema, I'll be perfectly honest. There's a couple of pages here that are very, very much in the Sal Buscema vein, and I kind of wonder if Buscema himself had something to do with them. I mean, they're that good of a copy. And nobody really draws exactly like Sal, but the rest of the time they really are more influenced by, you know, John Buscema, and in fact John Buscema trying to draw like Jack Kirby. Now, speaking of Jack Kirby, I actually did have a look. I went back and looked at Thor number 133, which was the issue where Thor initially fights Ego, the Living Planet. Remember, he and the Recorder trying to figure out what's going on with Ego. This is before Ego was kind of established as a character. And they're attacked by this Tower of Antibodies. This is a direct steal of that page. And I kind of thought it was, judging by the positioning of some of the characters, it is pretty much a direct steal. There are differences, of course, but by and large, it's pretty much exactly the same drawing. I'm not really sure how I feel about that kind of a ripoff. But, I mean, I'm sure if you ask Ron Friends, he would say it's an homage. And I suppose it is an homage. And they are separated as it is by, you know, 20 plus years. But it just seems to me that, okay, if you're going to kind of steal that layout, you at least put something in there, you know, maybe some kind of a mention that this is an homage. I don't know. Anyway, it just seemed to me to be a little bit cheap. Now, speaking of cheap, I'm going to get to something I didn't like about the issue, and that is Tom DeFalco's treatment of the Celestials. I really want to like this story. I really do. I like the Celestials. I like the Eternals. I remember when the Eternals came out. This was one of my favorite series when it's an initial run, when Kirby was writing and drawing it. And the Celestials, to me, need to be mysterious, period. Without that, the Celestials are nothing. They're just boring characters. And to me, the mindset of a Celestial needs to be completely unlike anything we can imagine. They're not to be human-like. They are not to have human-like morals. They should be so completely alien that we have no hope of comprehending their thought process. Tom DeFalco, to me, single-handedly ruined all the mystery of the Celestials in this story. And the reason I say that is because now we know what happens when the Celestials judge a planet. And what happens is the good guys live, the bad guys die. Now there's no more mystery. Before, you know, we were given the choice here in the Eternal series, we didn't know what was going to happen. We figured that, you know, Celestials judge poorly, everything on Earth goes. And of course, on Earth, you had the three races, and that was something that was set up, of course, in the Eternal series, where you have the Eternals, the humans, and the Deviants. But, you know, here on this planet, we just have the normal people and, you know, these pirates that came from other planets. Now, so the dominant race was the pirates. So Celestials come in, they swoop in, they destroy the pirates, they leave the good people, and then everybody is happy, the end. And now the Celestials have no mystery. They're dull. They're boring. We know what's going to happen. People will be lining up to have the Celestials come to their planet because, yay, they're going to destroy all the bad people or we're going to be happy. And that doesn't work for me for these characters, these fantastic characters that Jack Kirby created and portrayed so well. We should be, you know, completely happy to know nothing about the Celestials. Now, that being said, I don't know how well they've been treated in the past. I kind of vaguely remember the first Celestial saga in Thor back in the 70s and remember that it was so-so. But at least they didn't, to my mind, ruin the Celestials in this way. I don't know how chatty the Celestials became later, but having them, you know, create this construct to come and talk to Thor and Myla at the end is very Ego the Living Planet. I mean, it is a recycled plot point, in fact, because that happened in the Ego versus Galactus story when he had these settlers. Remember the refugees from Galactus's travels who settled on the surface of Ego, and Ego sent that old man sort of, you know, biological construct to them. And that's kind of similar to what happens here. I get it that they're trying to harken back to older Thor stories. I get it that they're trying to be retro, get away from the Walt Simonson kind of structure of the series. And hopefully, at that point, they were trying to stay away from the sort of Rob Liefeld Image Comics, the transformation that was happening in Marvel, where everything was becoming super violent and really, really badly written and drawn. And of course, you know, we're going to get some of that later. But still, to my mind, in some ways, rather unsatisfying. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Let me know. Write to the show. Join our Facebook group. You can email the show, of course. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And of course, you can leave us comments there as well. All right. So that's it for this week, folks. Once again, thanks very much for listening. And now it's time to mount the Rainbow Bridge, to prance down the Rainbow Bridge back to Midgard, and we will see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard. Radio Free Asgard is the property of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor, his supporting cast, and the various stories that we feature on the show are copyright Marvel Comics and are presented for review and educational purposes, and we hope you find them entertaining as well. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elvesmith, are copyright Motzvent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll tell your friends, or leave us an iTunes review, or even join our Facebook group. We do love hearing from our listeners. And if you didn't like it, well, oh well, we'll try to do better next time. Once again, thank you very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.